Hello and welcome to the Oldie podcast with me, Harry Mount, editor of the Oldie. And this week I'm delighted to have the filmmaker James Fletcher on the program, who is making a film about Donald Trump called The Accidental President. And today, James, we had a most extraordinary time in Manchester, New Hampshire, observing the enormous queue outside the rally for Donald Trump. And weren't you overwhelmed by it?
Well, I was amazed by how long it was. I'm going to guess it was about 2 miles long. And something I've never seen anywhere in any political context was the fact that every single member of the public waiting to go into the arena was wearing some kind of Trump merchandise, branding, whatever it may be. And I just could never, ever imagine seeing that in England for either the Conservatives or Labour.
Well, you've worked for both Boris Johnson and David Cameron, and I agree, you can't imagine people at a rally for either of those two prime ministers wearing a Boris Johnson baseball cap or a David Cameron scarf, but there was huge amounts of merchandise, as you say, and it was freezing cold in the pouring rain, and this was 6 or 7 hours before the rally began. And the other thing is, for listeners who don't know about primaries, the primaries were the Democratic primaries, and so it's extraordinary that a Republican president should come to New Hampshire. What do you think his tactics were?
Trump is a mercenary, and he knows that if he wants to win in 2020, the Queensbury rules straight out of the window. But yes, Donald Trump has no shame, which is not exactly breaking news. And there he is in New Hampshire, hours before the primary starts, hours before votes are cast. Many would consider it absolutely outrageous, but he sees it as part of the game. And if the next person is not prepared to do it, he is. And he knows the rewards of doing it are enormous.
And it was extraordinary as you go through Manchester, New Hampshire, not that big a town. The place is littered with banners and posters for the many Democratic candidates to become president. But they were all overwhelmed by the arrival of the orange one, weren't they?
Well, of course, you know, when the President of the United States arrives anywhere on the planet, the whole Secret Service machinery has to shut the town down, the local airport, the roads to and from and around the arena. It's just outrageous. During a Democratic primary, to arrive in Air Force One with the whole razzmatazz of the presidency, and this is what he was very good at doing in 2016, which was diverting all attention to him. He knew that an outrageous tweet or hitting below the belt on certain issues with certain parts of the electorate would divert all attention to him. And he's doing it all over again in 2020. And it was very clear to me today that it was working. However much one doesn't like Trump, I think it's reasonable to remark that these were ordinary people going to see their candidate, behaving perfectly well.
Yeah, having quite a good time. There was a sort of jolly atmosphere, wasn't it? There wasn't a malicious or aggressive atmosphere.
And actually also, as we said, to the Dems' credits, you know, the Democrats resisted the temptation to go and bait the Trump supporters. So it actually was a pretty interesting thing to witness.
And so this is also a preview of what I think Lynton Crosby, who's advised both David Cameron and Boris Johnson on British elections, calls GOTV. Can you explain GOTV to listeners, please?
GOTV is quite simply get out the vote. And every political campaign has a unit which is devoted to this most important activity. If you don't convert the intention to vote for any particular candidate into an actual vote, the whole exercise is wasted. And so it was interesting again to see that clearly was part of the whole exercise today.
And actually, we had the good fortune to bump into one of the hot Democrat favourites, Bernie Sanders, in La Piccola Italia Ristorante on Elm Street in Manchester. But he seemed pretty underwhelming, didn't you think?
Yeah, he did. And he's 78 years old. And we've been talking as well today about travelling. Travelling's tiring. Travelling's tiring, going from one city to another on one occasion for one reason. These candidates of advanced years especially do this day in, day out. And this is just the beginning.
And all these factors suggested to me that the next President of the United States will be the current President of the United States after the November election. Do you agree?
When you look back on elections, it's often the most simple points which indicate the potential outcome. So, you know, look at yard signs and flags and merchandise and all that kind of thing. Well, even in the Democrats' primary in New Hampshire, I would say Trump was neck and neck with the rest of them, typical. Oh, and Harry, the other wonderful detail was, as they all stood outside in the cold and wet, the Trump campaign had placed this enormous cinema-sized screen outside the venue with booming sound, entertaining partly, but of course hammering home the Trump message. This is a sign of what's coming in the general election. Everywhere he goes, this level of attention to detail is clearly going to be in play. And we know very well Trump understands production and messaging, as we saw in 2016, 1,000 times better than the Democrats in their current state. And that could be another indication of what's to come.
And the film you're currently making, The Accidental President, is about the 2016 election and why he won and how he won and why did he win and how did he win?
One of the great errors people made in 2016 was they spent so much time laughing at Trump and dismissing him and thinking he was a bit of a character and he'd be out of the race fairly soon and then we'd get some of the serious politics. And it was a bit like a fire in a building. You need to call the fire brigade immediately and attend to it there and then. The Clinton campaign strategically decided that keeping Trump in the Republican process was a good thing for them because he would contaminate the field and make them all look stupid. Of course, Trump took them out one by one because as the other 16 were all playing the same game, he was playing the exact opposite. So it was very easy for him to look different. And none of them had prepared or predicted the way he would behave. And it was in many ways like the plot of a terrible film. Every time he did the one thing you should never do, be rude about Mexicans. We all know what happened on the famous bus. He was rude about John McCain, a war hero, which in America is absolutely sacred ground, and you just don't do it. And anyone else would have been doomed by any of these things he did. And one of my fascinations has been how he survived several landmines. And not only did he survive them, he actually benefited. So yes, that's what our film looks at. A number of themes around the Trump election. But for me, the most important ones are that many people were fast asleep.
And in terms of his actual character, it's understandable why people think he's unpleasant. But they're wrong to think of him as stupid, isn't that right?
I agree with you. I think it's a very easy thing to say. But, you know, people said George W. Bush was stupid, and now they're almost misty-eyed, nostalgic for George W. Bush because, you know, don't we all now think he was not a genius, but certainly perhaps not as stupid as Trump. Well, both these people became the most powerful man on the earth twice. Or, forgive me, one did it twice and one's possibly about to do it again. So I think Trump is cunning and he knows how to message and he has this great instinct for what people enjoy and like to hear. And you only need to look at a Trump rally versus a Hillary Clinton rally where everyone looked bored rigid. She had no ability to connect with the crowd, no emotional read of the people. And at Trump's rally, everyone's having a good time. And that's why they're queuing around, you know, several blocks this morning in Manchester, New Hampshire. And it could well repeat itself if, you know, imagine Mike Bloomberg, terrible public speaker, most of the Dems, terrible public speakers. And that is the skill you need to have. And then another time, perhaps, we can talk about his use of Twitter and social media, which was a direct threat to conventional media, so that every time he was outrageous on Twitter, all the television stations, all the newspapers, all the radio stations ended up covering the tweet. And Trump's probably his best skill is getting attention. And we can all laugh at that, saying, oh, come on, do you really need that much attention? But it is a skill, and it is a skill in politics. And to a certain extent, it's a skill Boris Johnson has. And that's why, in my view, he's the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, because he worked out that being a celebrity has a certain value, and being well known is very, very useful versus being obscure. No one's ever argued that's a good thing in politics. Trump is a very hard guy to beat, and now you have to count in the fact that he's president of the United States. And it is very hard to unseat a president, especially when the economy is not catastrophic, especially when the country's not at war, which I've been told Trump will go to great lengths to avoid because he sees it as a terrible waste of money. So we saw this recently with the Iran fiasco. And I don't see any strategy or brilliance among the Democrats for having worked out a solution to take the battle to Trump.
And I'll finish with a very interesting thing you told me, talking about Trump wanting to be the center of attention. He did a very, very clever thing, you told me, with his security detail in the build-up to the 2016 election. What was that?
That's right. He worked out a year before polling day that having Secret Service protection gives, as Americans say, him the optics of looking presidential. Nothing makes you look more important than being protected by the Secret Service. What he did was he petitioned the head of Homeland. There are two ways you get Secret Service protection. The only person that has to have it compulsorily is the president of the United States. Doesn't matter what you think, you have to have it. Other than that, either the director of Homeland Security has to inform you that Homeland is aware of a clear and present danger to your person and gives you the option of Secret Service protection, which you're still not obliged to take, or you petition the head of Homeland Security. Ben Carson was the other person to get it in November 15. Trump obviously made it clear there were tremendous threats to his person, and so he petitioned Homeland successfully for Secret Service protection. And the two benefits are, firstly, you look very important wherever you go. Roads are closed, airports are closed. And the second thing is you get the logistical benefit of the Secret Service. So because the airport is closed and because all the roads are closed, you can work four cities in a day when the Republican candidates who don't have Secret Service protection are waiting in the queue at the airport.
Well, how very fascinating. Thank you so much to James Fletcher, maker of the film The Accidental President, for appearing on the Oldie Podcast.